So, Jimmy, you just got back like yesterday, today?
Yesterday morning. So we didn't pod last week. I left with Derek. Came
is
here.
That a verb?
It is now.
Is it? We didn't pod.
Didn't the pod. Pod.
I listen to Pete and Sebastian, and they always call it the pod. It's a couple of comedians are like, they always call it the pod. So we didn't do the pod last week because I left. Derek came here from Boston Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, we hopped in the car at 4:30 in the morning. And we drove all day last Wednesday we got to Nashville, just outside of Nashville. We drove down Broadway. Derek had never been there. And I drove right past that spot. We took our famous selfie together when we all had baby faces. Remember we did that DeWalt event together? So we drove right past that corner and down and around Broadway, showing them all the neon. And we got back on the highway. And the next exit, we got a hotel. So that was day one. And the next day, we got into town. We left Nashville at like 5 in the morning. And we got to Dallas, and we went right to Andrew's house, Andrew from Blacksmith Tools, and we hung out with Andrew for a little. We got there still early, late in the afternoon, still like not nighttime yet. So we had a lot of time when we got there. And then the next day, the next morning, we went over to the Gas Monkey Garage, which is from the TV show. Richard Rawlings and Gas Monkey Garage. That's where Bailey Industries hosted a sheet metal forming class, cold forming metal sheet class. I don't know. There's no rhythm to that. I can't figure out what the rhythm is in the name of that class. Metal forming class. And that involves power hammers, and not power hammers in the way that like you might be used to seeing them on my channel, but power hammers that go really fast under the power. Sometimes at air, they're like forming sheet metal, making gas tanks. And the class was great. They had 5, maybe 6 instructors that spent the whole day one and half a day two, just talking about theory. And we weren't allowed to touch anything till halfway through day two. And then we worked all halfway through day two and then all day three. And
how was that for you?
Like, it was great.
To listen and not do anything.
Yeah. No, it was great because I learned so much just sitting and listening. It's kind of what we'll talk about today. Just listening to these guys that have so much experience shaping metal, you look at a flat sheet of metal and you think to yourself, how could that possibly be a gas tank? Or how could that possibly be a fender with all the debris curves in it? It's concave, it's convex, it's curved gently one direction. And you think, you see these guys making cobras on top of wooden bucks. And you think, how is that possible? It just seems completely impossible. But after listening to these guys, because I went in there pretending I knew nothing, because I really didn't know much. I know I could shape sheet metal. I could put a bead on something. I could roll over an edge. But to make, say, for instance, a gas tank, I've watched that for years on Discovery Channel, and I don't know what they're doing. They don't give you instructions. They just show how it's happening. But what is the theory behind moving that metal? And you know, when you get a dent in your car, and then you try and flatten it out, but then it's like, still oil cans, that dent has stretched that metal even just the slightest bit. And now when you try and now you have to shrink that metal again. And there's obviously ways you could do it with heat. There's ways you could do it with certain type of machines. But the idea of like what happens when a metal gets dented and stretching it in one direction or all directions using the English wheel. So we learned how to hammer, use the English wheel, and then obviously use all the power hammers that they have and the various dies on the power hammers. You have shrinking dies, you have rounding dies, and then you have straight peens, and using all those particular tools and listening to the pros talk about it was really, really, really good for me. I wasn't anxious to jump in there because I didn't know what I was doing. I could jump in there, but screw it up. And I spent most of my time hammering with the anvil, which is just a wooden anvil in a shot bag, because I wanted to really understand what happens. You could use the power hammers, but it's really doing the same thing you do by hand. So I just really wanted to understand it by hand. And it was great. We made all types of experiments once they let us loose. There was about 30, maybe 35, 40 people in the class. And so they broke it up into the 6 different teachers. So if you wanted to learn that process from that teacher, each one of the teachers specialized or at least taught a specific. One taught a fender, one taught the gas tank, one taught this fender that had a full 90 degree bend in it. And some talk just get little dimples out. So everybody ran to each individual thing. And I just stayed on the anvil with the gas tanks for the most part. And then using I can't even remember what the name of these things were, but just the you ever see like the little hand, the air hammer thing in like a little frame, like a little C frame. and it's like, you just pass the metal through and it flattens out all your hammer marks. And then also the English wheel. So I spent a lot of time playing with the English wheel. I have one. I never really understood, but now I have a much better direction on it. So it was great. It was really great. And then we drove home and we left there Sunday afternoon and we drove all day. We hit Nashville again, woke up and drove all the way until we got back home. So we got home a day early. We thought we were going to get home Tuesday night. We got home Tuesday morning. We got in at like 5 a.m. Tuesday and Derek took a nap and then he skedoodled home. And then I had all day yesterday just to catch up. And now here we are Wednesday morning and I'm back in the groove. It was like I never left.
Nice.
So, yeah, but it was great. It was, I started talking to Bailey, the marketing director at Bailey. He reached out to me a couple of years ago and nothing ever really came of it. And then he reached out to me again. He said, your name came up. He says, would you be interested in taking this class? I said, sure, let's do it. And he's like, I'll buy you a hotel room. He goes, let's get to know each other. And I said, sure. So I said to Derek, you want to drive with me?
that phrase right there.
What's that?
I'll buy you a hotel room. Let's get to know each other.
Oh, yeah. No, well, he and the class, obviously, he waived the class fee for me and Derek, which was nice. So I don't know. I might have some upcoming stuff with them. We talked there a little bit, but it was really just to get into know your thing. And it was great. It was really great. So I did a little social media on this stuff, but I'll be doing more.
So, awesome.
That's it. I run out of breath.
Sounds good. So, I mean, obviously if you're talking to Bailey, you may end up getting machines through them. So that kind of answers my question, but my question was going to be, since you spent that most of the time with the hammer and the anvil, are you thinking about doing metal shaping that direction, more of the manual, or are you going to now start buying a bunch of those tools to do?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a good question. So I'm making my go-kart. I'm planning on making it an aluminum body on the outside. It's going to be a 1920s kind of roadster race car. And I'm going to do the best I can with the hammer. And the metal shaping that I want to do on that, I don't really need these big machines. If you was going to put, say, for instance, a real shallow curve, like on a door skin for like a Model T, they went over that. Or like the doors, a piece of sheet metal on the roof of a, you know, a 70s hot rod, and you wanted to replace the middle of the roof. They showed how to make that subtle curve in like a 3x4 foot piece of sheet metal and how you would get that to cover the whole roof. I won't need any of those sort of compound curves that you really can't do by hand. You'd have to really use one of the rounding dies on the bigger machines on it's basically a hammer. It's a power hammer, but there's like another couple of initials in there for their models. I can't remember them. So I think what I'm going to do for the go-kart is probably by hand, but if I told my friend there, I said, I'm going to be doing this go-kart. I'm going to try and finish it by July. I said, so I have most of May and all of June to do it. I was like, if there's any machines you want to show off that you know what I could do, I said, by all means, park them there. But if not, I'm just going to keep working on it by hand. And then, you know, the hammer will get the credit. The hammer and the wooden anvil will get the product placement. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Like I said, it was just getting to know you, but it was a really, really good experience from an educational point of view. And then seeing Richard Rawlings' layout is insane. He's got the craziest complex merch store, burnout circle. There was a tour coming through. This is the funniest thing. I tell a funny story. Derek will be proud of this. So we get there and it's like all guys, nobody knows each other. And by the way, it's all car culture. Me and Derek are the only guys that are like makers. Everybody else is built hot rods. Everybody else. And either they have a company or they have a personal hot rod they're building for themselves. And they're just, this is a hobby for them, but everybody there just builds cars. And so there was a food truck day one, getting to know you. They brought a food truck in. So everyone's like having some Mexican food off the food truck and getting to know each other and talking. We all had to wait in line and nobody's really talking yet, except for the guys that already know each other. And so me and Derek are online and a tour had come through, like maybe 20 people. And one of Richard's guys was walking them through all the different garages that have all his beautiful cars in them. And there's people on the other side of the fence. And at one point we're waiting in line and a woman walks up, holding her son's hand up to the line in front of everybody and walks up and says, can we take our picture with you? To me. And then I go, Derek's here too. And the kid goes, oh. And so we take a picture together with me and Derek and everybody's looking like, what why does this strange woman and the son want a picture with these two guys? And the woman was French. I said, I started talking to her and she's like, I only speak French. We're visiting from France. We're going home tomorrow. And the little kid, I go, what do you make? And the kid just goes, and that's when she goes, he doesn't speak English. But the kid was so excited. And then we took a group picture together. And then they walked away. And then me and Derek went back to waiting for our tacos. And everybody was like, what was that about?
Who is this rock star?
And then people got to know us, and they're like, oh, I think my kid watches that show. You know, it's that kind of thing. But the guys there were so cool. Like everybody, I say it over and over again. When you're dealing with the professionals in any industry, they're very gracious and extremely willing to share information. It's like the amateurs and the people that, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but it's a lot of the guys that think they're pros. Those are the ones that are critical and kind of keep an industry closed off to newcomers. But the super pros are always extremely gracious. And that's what I could say this whole group of guys was. They were all very, very, very skilled. Even the students were very skilled at what they do. And they were more than gracious and happy to share information and just and get to know you. So that was, it was a real good experience. Even Richard Rawlins was great. We only talked for a few minutes here and there, but he was also very cool. You know, very, he's like, your guys are in my house. You just treat it like it's yours. And he had these hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Lamborghinis and Ferraris and all kinds of crazy hot rod cars all over the place. Like you could literally just like get in them and sit in them. I wouldn't, because that's just not how I am. But some of the guys got in the cars and like took pictures in them. He didn't care at all. He was just like, whatever, whatever. I didn't even, I didn't touch or lean on anything, of course. But he has some collection of cars, a real variety of cars. And this is a funny story. It's just one funny story and then I'll stop talking, I promise. Somebody showed up with a 1969 Ford LTD station wagon, a Country Squire station wagon that was perfectly worn, not hot rotted, perfectly weather and worn, 100,000 miles, not rotted, but perfectly worn, perfectly patinaed, a little bit of rust in various spots. Dashboard was all cracked up from the sun, but it was a 1969 Ford station wagon that you would see and be like, it looked like the Griswold car, but perfectly patinaed. And so Richard did his little, hey, everybody, thanks for coming. You know, this is my house, your house. Treat it like yours. Just, you know, be careful, everybody, wear your safety gear. And he goes, and one last thing, who owns the Ford LTD? And this guy, Blake, goes, it's mine. He goes, you're not leaving with that car. And right there, everybody goes, he goes, how much you want for it? He goes, oh, man, it's not for sale. It's just a bit special memento. And he goes, how much you want for it? He goes, I'll give you 10 grand right now. And he goes, nah, man, I can't do it. I can't do 10 grand. Nah, man. I love that car. I did a lot of mechanical work on it. He's like, all right, we'll talk. And then so now the whole weekend goes by. And then at the end of the weekend, Richard goes up and says, thanks everybody for coming. I had a wonderful time. I hope you learned something. He goes, and one last thing. He goes, where's Blake? And Blake's like, he goes, all right, everybody knows Blake in the Ford, right? He goes, I brought Blake. He goes, everybody check out my second showroom. And Larry's like, yeah, yeah, that's where all the real fancy cars were. He goes, I walked Blake through there and I tried to trade him the Z28. He said, no. I tried to trade him the V12 Mercedes. He said, no. I tried to trade him the T-Bucket Hot Rod. He said, no. I tried to trade him the this. He said, no. And he's just sitting there like, Blake's like, no, man, I can't give that car up. I can't. He goes, wow. So this, he goes, so just so y'all know, something's wrong with this guy. And then he just like said, thanks, everybody, walked away. He tried to offer him cars that were like into probably the one car he's talking about was probably at least $100,000. And he's like, no. He goes, I love my Ford LTD. I'm not giving it up. But it was really funny. It was like a little bit of like showmanship, like you'd see on like the video. It was really funny. He's like, I want that car. So anyway, everyone's like, you could be driving home in a Mercedes drop top. He's like, nah, man. I like my Ford, man. It was really funny.
That's pretty great.
Anyway, I got a video of that. I'll send you guys a clip. I have my Metas on. It's like one reason I have. I like click turn my Metas on, and I got him talking about that.
That sounds like a great trip.
Yeah, so now I'm back and I have a concept for a vice caddy. I have a hardtail vice from Fireball Tools and it has this hardtail that doesn't move. It's the vice mechanism slides in and out of it internally. So you have this whole shelf on the back and I'm constantly balancing screwdrivers and hammers and and punches on it. So I'm going to plasma cut up like a caddy and probably make one for JD who has one, maybe make one for Derek. So I'll make a few of those. So that's this week's video is me designing and developing this tool caddy for the back of the hardtail Fireball vice. So I'm going to start working on that today. And then I have started my go-kart. I've been working on all the details for my go-kart. I'm starting out with the axle first in the back. So I had to make new hubs for the tires. I went online and I bought four front tires for dirt bikes. So the tires are 20 inch overall, and those are going to be my four wheels. So I have sturdy wheels, but since they're all four front wheels, I have to adapt to the rear. And then once I get it all done, they're black and chrome, the rims. I'm going to paint them red so they look real vintage. The car is going to be a Carolina sponsor. So it's going to look like a 1920s Carolina shoe sponsored race car. It's going to have like paint on aluminum and stuff. That's the thought. That's the vision. Little leather, maybe like a red leather tufted seat, some cool stuff. And Sparks, the motorcycle company in Connecticut, is making me the drivetrain. It's going to be good.
Well,
so I'm working on that. To them about electrifying my Vespa. I was thinking about that after you mentioned them.
That's a great idea, yeah.
I'm sure they probably have what you would need to do it already and just like, you know, have to configure it a little bit. But
well, I was on the phone. Matt is his name. Matt and I went back and forth and he's like, tell me the size of your tires, how fast you want to go, how long do you want to drive? And I was like, I don't need to go more than 35 miles an hour on my track and, you know, a couple hours. And so he's like, you know what, this will give you some more headroom. This will give you more battery life. He put together a little package for me. And he's putting the system together and the computer and everything for me. So he's going to bring it over. We're going to talk about it. So that should be fun.
You're going to need the goggles.
Yes. 100%. And the scarf.
In the scarf, yep.
No, oh, yeah. Look like Snoopy.
Oh. Awesome. Well, David, what have you been up to?
I just finished up, and it should be out, I think, tomorrow, the gigantic cassette tape. I started that 200 and almost 60 days ago now, and it just sat on the shelf waiting for inspiration to strike, and it never did strike, so I just decided to work on it again. And it came out really, really good. Not sure why it took so long. I'm very biased to whatever my latest piece is. My latest, whatever I'm working on is my favorite piece. And right now this just happens to be my favorite piece. And so it looks really good. All kinds of disciplines. There's lots of woodworking and 3D printing, and it has little screw heads, and I couldn't find gigantic Phillips heads to put where the screws were. And so I got some metallic filament from my 3D printer and printed the Phillips heads. And I was like, no, it just looks 3D printed. So I don't know if you've ever done this, but I got chrome paint markers and I just laid a really heavy chrome paint over there, and it has a mirror finish. It is a hack if you want to make 3D printing look like metal. So
did you have to put anything down on the surface for it to like look even?
No, really? No. Oh. I printed in very fine lines, 0.16, whatever. I used the higher quality 3D print. So there's always going to be lines in there, especially with like a domed surface. Yeah. But I just lay down a heavy coat of the chrome paint. It took a long time to dry because I put it on so heavy, but I wanted it to do that like surface tension thing where it just kind of bubbles on top. Gotcha. And, yeah, it came out really good. And then I also just finished up another project. I got a UV printer, and you can print directly on wood, which is really exciting for me because I've done all kinds of like, I've dyed veneers and done CNC and laser work and image transfers and stuff. But now I have this thing that can print right on wood and glass and whatever. So I took one of my shaker tables that I have in the living room, and I made this design and I printed it on that, and it came out really good. And then in the same video, this video is not going to come out for another week or so, but I took a photo when I was in Yellowstone last year. I took a photo of a lake, and there's a mountain behind there. It looks like you're classic, everybody takes this photo of a lake and mountain type thing. And I removed the trees in the background, and then I printed that photo on a big 13 by 16 inch piece of 1/8 inch plywood. And then in front of that on glass, I printed trees. And then in front of that, I printed this phrase, and then another, and then a fourth layer, I printed more trees. And then it all fits into a frame. and there's a quarter inch gap between all the panes. And so it has this like 3D parallax type of look. And the phrase that I have on there is kind of in between trees. And it came out really, really awesome. And the frame for me is part of the art. I wanted you to be able to look at it from the side and see the panes of glass and the layer of wood. So I only wanted the frame to have a top and bottom, but the sides exposed. And so on the two side, like it's the top and bottom of the frame is like 2 inches thick. So it sticks out 2 inches from the wall, shadow box style. And I've got threaded rod exposed from the outsides and cap nuts on the top and bottom that kind of pinches and holds the whole thing together. It came out really cool. It was one of those projects, like I have the idea. I don't know what the image is going to be. So let's just start on the frame. And we made the frame, and then I sat on it for a couple of days until I came up with the idea for the multi-layered image on there, and it came out good. It's one of those things. It's going to go in the art show. The cassette's going to go in the art show. Everything from here on out is nothing but things that are going to contribute to the art show in June.
That's awesome.
And what was the date of the show again?
June 20th and June 27th.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'm going to be. I got to go to, actually, I'm going to be in Ohio for Weave a Leather class. Maybe I'll scoot over.
I'll make room for you.
No, I intended on coming to see it, but that's the same weekend as the Weave a Leather class. So we'll figure something out. We'll see if we can't figure it out. We're only going to be a couple hours apart.
All right. Yeah. The my Patreon people seem to have just picked June 20th as the date that they're all coming up. So that's the first date seems to be where most people are traveling. Funny thing is we picked two Saturdays. So there's an opening and a closing. And I went through all the calendars, making sure there's no Mud Hens game downtown, nothing, no big events. So we worked around, there's a big flower event that happens in every spring. And, I worked around all these events. I'm like, okay, parking and hotels is going to be easy. Well, it turns out on the first date, the opening on June 20th, directly across the street, they're having a nighttime farmer's market that starts at 6 p.m. My art show starts at 6 p.m.
Oh, no.
And it's a good thing because there's going to be a lot of foot traffic.
You have a lot of walk-ins, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to have food trucks. We've got a food truck, too, but there's going to be all kinds of food trucks, and they're making it this big nighttime farmer's market type thing. And it's just going to make parking near the event a little bit more difficult. But it's a good thing.
How's the area? Like, is it a walkable area where people could park a little bit further out?
It's downtown, and there are hotels downtown, so you can get a hotel and you can walk to the gallery, and then there's all kinds of restaurants in that area. Yeah, it's a very walkable, friendly area.
Awesome. Cool. Very cool. Did you want to go ahead and talk about your what happened this past week?
Yes. So this turning a disaster into something good. I'm working on this big sculpture. It's one of the bigger pieces for the show. And it's a cookie. It's a walnut cookie that I think I talked about it a little bit before, but I hollowed out the middle, took out the middle. And that was a whole learning process because the cookie is 5 or 6 inches thick. So it's really hard to you can't just jigsaw it through. And so there was a whole process getting that done. And then I routed a lip all along the back side where that hole is. And then I got this huge $400 piece of brass that I've been hammering into the hole. So like from the front side, it looks like it's kind of like coming at you. And I'm on my last, and this is a multi-week thing because I can only hammer so long, and then I need a
exhausting. I learned that. Off.
Yeah, but it's coming out really good, and so I'm working on the lip. So I'm shaping the brass to try to get into the lip. It's pretty much the last pass before I send this brass off to get chromed, and I'm working on the lip, and I'm pounding, and then all of a sudden the cookie just breaks in half, and I am known for overreacting, and just, not being good in the moment and yelling, it broke. I just looked at it and I was eerily calm. It was one of those things where it was like, maybe I can cancel the art show now. Pressure's off. It was a weird moment. And then I was like, no, we're going to fix it. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to fix it right now. You're in the zone and you don't want to put it off. You want to keep going. So I'm in the zone. I'm going to get some big clamps. I'm going to clamp it back together and I'm going to epoxy it back together. And I'm getting up. I have it in the clamps and I've got epoxy on there and I'm trying to get it in all the little cracks. And I realize like the epoxy is just pouring through the bottom. Oh, I got to get tape on there. And I'm by myself. Jefferson's not with me. And I can't get the tape to come off the roll because I got gloves on because I'm doing the epoxy thing. And I'm like, I take the gloves off and I'm trying to get tape wrapped around the bottom. And I stick both of my hands in like all the epoxy. It was almost like I dipped my hands into a cup of epoxy. And I was like, well, we're in it now. So I just worked barehanded, getting the tape on all the epoxy. And I had to do the Hey Siri thing. How do I wash epoxy off my hands? Because if you've ever gotten it on you, it does not wash off with soap and
alcohol.
It suggested vinegar.
So, no kidding.
Huh. White vinegar, apple cider vinegar, whatever kind of vinegar you have. And it actually does work. It takes a little bit of time, but it does work. But then you do stink for the rest of the day. But
yeah, it's like 30 feet.
So after all of that, the sculpture is going to be even better now because, well, I'm going to backtrack. A few weeks ago, we did a cleaning of the shop and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get rid of a bunch of tools that I've had for years that I don't need. And I came across some butterfly templates for, you know, like butterfly, like live edge crack check type thing. And I'm like, I haven't used these in years. I don't need them. So I got rid of my butterfly templates. They were the like half inch acrylic. And then here I am. I need to do some butterflies on this to repair it. But instead of just using a typical bow tie, I decided to draw X's on there so it looks like stitches. I used white paint to draw the X's. Then I took a photo of that and brought it into the computer and traced it. And I made the stitches, and then using a router and a template, I made the pocket. And so it's walnut, and then it has these maple. It's all end grain. So the walnut is end grain, and then the inlay butterflies are end grain. And so it has this maple contrast and it looks like it's been repaired because it has. So it made the project even better. It has more character. Nobody got hurt.
It's good.
Just had epoxy all over you.
It got epoxy. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm glad, you know, obviously I don't want stuff to go wrong for you, but I'm glad that you immediately pushed through rather than like setting it aside and feeling like, oh, I'll come back and fix it later, because that distance would make it harder to get back to. And
that is exactly what I do.
Yeah. I mean, everybody does that, but yeah, that's great. Let's see, for me, it's been kind of weird last couple weeks. Just been cleaning and trying to organize stuff and felt like that was good, but I think it was truthfully just procrastination. So it was, you know, it was good because I actually got a lot of stuff cleaned up and, excuse me, put a bunch of stuff on eBay and things like that, but I wasn't actually getting anything done, you know. So this week I really dug in and I'm working on this project. I'll get to that in a minute. I also spent some time thinking about the pool house and like what's next for it. And so I started looking at, you know, if we want to use it for anything other than storage, it's going to be pretty warm in there. So I need to, as I'm thinking about finishing the inside, we got to think about like how we're going to cool it. And there's not really enough power out there to run another. I didn't think there was enough power out there to run another circuit to add an AC unit. Turns out I think there is. But anyway, that led me down looking for solar, because I'd considered putting solar panels on top of it enough to maybe just add, run the AC or just do the lights or, you know, just a little bit, because I don't really know much about solar. So I didn't know what it would take to accomplish much with it. Anyway, so I started looking into it, and it turns out you can get a mini split for that. It's only 160 something square feet, so it's a very small space. You can get a small mini split and solar panels to run directly into the AC. Like, I would just envision that you have to have a big inverter and some sort of a thing that like draws it and manages it and whatever. And I found several videos of people just, you just get the right plug and you plug one thing into another and then the AC runs while there's solar coming in. And then you can extend that by putting like a battery backup type thing, EcoFlow style, you know, big home battery thing in the middle of it. And so it charges and then, you know, whatever. And then some of those can backfeed into the local power. Like you can add a switch there, or you can have it charge from the local wired power when the solar's not. Anyway, it was way less complicated than I thought. And so I started actually making progress on figuring out what to get, both solar panel wise, which unit to get, which battery to get, and all that type of stuff. So that felt good, because it, something that I thought was going to be really difficult, is not, I don't think, going to be as difficult as I thought. And if I felt that way about it, then I can imagine that other people probably feel the same way about it. And so maybe people who have sheds or detached garages or whatever would like to be able to add something to it, but they think that the solar addition is really complicated. And I'm sure it can be, but to make it basically usable is not complicated, apparently. So I'm kind of excited about the fact that I get to figure that out, but also it may be useful for other people in the same way.
Are you doing the battery backup thing, or are you just going to go direct in?
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the battery backup. We actually have one of the companies that has been trying to figure out how to sponsor a video for a long time, and I didn't really have a good use for it. And so I didn't want to just like, here, I have a battery that I'm going to use in my driveway. You know, it like didn't make any sense. But this is the perfect use case for an intermediary thing, you know, holding pin for the power, and then you can also take it with you. So it made sense finally to get those things together.
Nice.
But then also from that, I started looking at insulating and, you know, what we're going to do for wall coverage. And I have to think about, you know, where the unit's going to go, the AC unit's going to go before I do the insulation and, you know, make sure that there's power and all. I have to start piecing those two things together. But I think finishing out the inside of it, the walls with the insulation and adding AC and solar, those are two separate things, but they rely on each other. So I have to kind of figure them both out. But anyway, that felt good. It felt cool to like figure out the next stage of making that something usable, something more than just a shell. Mm-hmm. I had been wanting to turn it into a gym because I want to build a climbing wall in it. And we have in our garage, we have like a weight rack and we have some other stuff. And, you know, several of us in the family use that at different times. And so I thought it'd be cool to put it all in one place, put it in there, make it a little gym that's kind of standalone. And Jenny was just not really into that idea. She wanted it to be more of a, I don't know, like a separate little thing, like a place you can go, because the windows on the back open up and they look into the field and it's really nice and pretty. And so I think she wants it more to be a place where she can go read and write and do creative things. And, you know, and then with the climbing wall in there, she was like, well, if you, on this side of the building, if you have, you know, we build in a bed or a couch and then we have a little desk and people can hang out and while you're climbing, and you can have friends over and they can climb and take turns. And like, I started to see it, oh yeah, it could be more of a finished space and more of a little hideaway kind of thing. So with that as the general direction, I'm thinking more about wall covering and insulation and actually making it cool temperature or heated depending on the season. Anyway, so that felt good to have some momentum on that, I think, to have kind of an idea what the next step is, because I've honestly really missed working on that building. That I didn't expect it, but that whole process has been one of the more gratifying things I've ever built. Like, it just, I learned a ton. It felt like there was always a next big thing to like attack, and I moved through it at it felt like a good pace, you know, of being productive, and you know, it was a lot of work, but hey, I actually got this done. And it was a lot of physical work. It felt good to like lift heavy things and, you know, do hard work again. You know, I mean, it's just not something I do very often. I don't like lift walls and build a roof on the roof and stuff like that. And so I've really missed working on the project. So having another stage to it feels cool. So that was one thing. And then this project I'm working on right now is something I've wanted to do for a long time. I probably told you guys about it a little bit, but it's like a dosing system for my aquariums, or an aquarium. And it's got an Arduino in it, and that drives these little peristaltic pumps, which are really cool. And each one of those, one side of the pump goes into a little bottle of whatever, fertilizer, iron, phosphorus, whatever the thing is that needs to go into the tank. And so then I've built some software that gives you basically a web page on your phone where you can manually turn on and off pumps. You can say, I want it to pump 5 milliliters of this one, and you hit go, and it just like turns on the pump and sucks it out of the bottle and squirts it out the other side. And that other side is going to be going into, all four of these pumps go into a little injector thing that I modeled and printed. And it's like some of the weirdest geometry I've ever done. It's a tube with four other tubes going into it and curving so that the flow of water runs through it will like take other liquids with it. I don't know. It's not that complicated, but it feels really cool because it's something very different for me. But I got it all working yesterday. Like, the whole thing, it does what it's supposed to do. It's sucking water out of one thing and putting it into another thing. So today I'm going to actually hook up this injector I made with a big plastic tub and a pump and start running water through it, and then, you know, have it suck some like food colored water so you can actually see it go and be injected into the thing. It's really cool. And the project itself, it excites me. The technology in it is not complicated, but it excites me. The modeling excites me. The last video I put out was a solid 10 out of 10. Like 11 out of 10. Yeah? You have that too?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I knew
welcome
it going
to the
in,
bottom.
But yeah.
It, and I don't welcome. Know. I've been thinking about this a lot.
We've been waiting for you, Bob.
Complain. I don't want to like, I don't want to whine about it, but there's something really disheartening.
Can I get
about
you coffee? Anything? Can I get you, make
cool.
you comfortable?
What?
So can I get you anything? Make you comfortable? Get you coffee? So welcome to the bottom.
I mean, I've had a lot of 10 out of 10s, but I think it's just when you don't expect something to just be, just to not hit or be ignored or whatever the case is. I don't know why. But in the moment, it sucks. It does not feel good to put a lot of work and into something that is cool in your own eyes, and then it just doesn't hit, right? But then after that, after it sucks, and you move on through the week and you start working on the next thing, there's a real hopelessness, for me anyway.
You're like, what's the point?
That is drug into the next thing that you're working on. And I mean, I'm being serious. Like, there's a hopelessness about this next one's not going to do any better. I know that's irrational, and I know it doesn't, it's like a totally different topic and everything.
That's why,
but
it's funny.
Thing
that's
that
why
I really don't like about the job that we have is that we don't have any control over, like, there's a gate where you have control up to this point. And that gate is title, thumbnail, release button. And then after that, you really have no influence, truly no influence on what happens after that.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens after that influences the next thing that you do, and so on and so on and so on. I'm sure other people's jobs are like this as well. I'm not trying to whine and complain, but I'm kind of reckoning with that again, that like, man, this stuff really influences what makes me excited in the future.
Yeah.
I don't know a way around that. There's got to be a way around that.
There's well, also...
Go ahead, Dave, then I'll go.
I catastrophize and things snowball in my head. So I knew my last video was not going to perform well. I just knew that going in. So my expectations were met, I guess. And it still hurt. It still hurts. But then I start thinking, well, this next one, if it fails, then this is the slope. This is the downfall. Because then, you know, my agent, my sponsors, they're going to see these terrible numbers. I'm not going to get any more deals. This is it. And it just snowballs. And, you know, this is a subject that I have talked about, in therapy, of like getting too excited when a video does well and then getting too depressed when a video does bad. I have a hard time just like taking care of those peaks. But yeah, I don't want to put out 2 10 of 10s in a row. That is a huge fear of mine. And I know in reality,
I could tell you how to handle it.
It's just a tiny drop in the big body of work that I've done.
Yeah. I was going to say, what it seems like, and I'm sure people get sick of hearing us talk about this type of stuff, but in general, I have to remind myself, I'm doing this because I love it. I'm doing this because this is what I'm compelled to do. I feel like sometimes I've been put here to teach other people how to do things, regardless whether it's a huge audience or if it's just a few people that want to follow along. A few people, you know, a few 40,000, 50,000, 60,000 people that want to follow along.
Yeah, there's that.
You know, and but I also feel like the algorithm, the ominous algorithm is trying to force us to change with its whimsy. The algorithm's whimsy is who knows what, you know, with the Temu reviews, who knows what it is that, but I feel like I'm still doing the same thing that I've always done. And it's funny when you get a comment, it's like, I like the videos where you used to, I'm like, A, I'm evolving, and B, I feel like I'm not evolving that much. I'm still just making stuff in my shop. My business has improved. My working conditions have improved. But then again, isn't that the goal in life, is to continuously improve? So I have no shame there. And I feel sometimes the algorithm is trying to twist us into a pretzel to do whatever it is that's going to make them happy. Remember when shorts came along, we were all like, I'm not going to do shorts. And then, you know, slowly we're all do shorts sometimes, sometimes no. Sometimes people specialize in shorts. Some people don't even understand what a long form video is. So that's going to keep happening. But I feel like as long as I stay true to what makes me happy in the videos that I want to do, if it doesn't get a lot of views, and to be perfectly honest, the advertisers don't seem to notice. They don't seem to care. As long as they can get a few clips to turn into reels later on, they're happy too. So at least that's been my experience. And we're all in the same boat. It seems like the maker community is really being twisted into this sync with, you know, get with the rhythm of what we want. Yeah. And I don't really even know what they want is. All I know is that they're favoring other things. I'm still proud of what I do. I'm still happy with what I do. And if I get 10 out of 10s every couple of weeks, there's nothing I can really do about it. I'm not going to start doing Temu reviews. I'm not going to start doing competitive things, or, you know, doing proving, oh, this theory I saw on TikTok, let me try and do what they've done and see if that really works. It's not in my art. It's not in my heart as an artist to do those things. I really got to do what I feel is true to me and the collections and the things that I'm doing and that I'm doing here to make me happy. And if nobody wants to watch it, my bills are still getting paid. I'm still happy.
Yeah, so. I think the worry there is that the bills won't get paid. But at the same time, yesterday I went for like overtime, you know. Yesterday I went for a walk and was thinking about this and a bunch of other stuff and really got to just imagining what it would be like to separate work from income. And this isn't a realistic thought. And it's not, in our society, it's like that doesn't happen. But I was thinking about, I don't want to have my life paid for so that I don't have to work. I would love to be able to work and not have it affect my life being paid for. Now, I was thinking about how freeing that would be if you had the separation of like my lifestyle, my family's taken care of, my whatever, if, you know, the money was there to do those things and that didn't require you to, like you're saying, kind of mold yourself and do things you wouldn't naturally do, or to change this about you or chase this job or whatever to make the money part happen. If you could somehow separate those things, and you got to work because you loved the work and you loved the output of the work, but your life didn't depend on it. I saw a thing the other day that, and I think this is part of what got me to this. There was a guy talking about, he was talking about men who complain about having to provide for their families. Like, I'm tired all the time because I have to work so hard to provide for my family. And it was some particular situation. I don't know. But he made the point, like, even if you were on your own, you still have to work to pay for your own life. And then that got me thinking about, yeah, that is kind of weird that we have to work to pay for our life. I think we're made to work. I think there are desires in us to do things, to be productive, to create things, to whatever. But it is kind of weird that we have to tie that to survival at this point in society, right? Like, I don't know. I don't have an endpoint for this thought process, but yesterday I was just thinking about, like, what would be different in how I do what I do if there wasn't money on the other side of it? If the survival thing and the provision thing was over there, and then over here, distinct from that was, what is the work you were made to do, and how can you do it as well as possible?
Mm-hmm.
And we can't separate those things in where we live and how we live and stuff. We can't, that I'm aware of, unless you're just independently wealthy. But the thought process of separating those things and really focusing, like turning away from the money and looking at the work and being like, what would I do different? How would I do what I do differently if I didn't have to make a living from it, but I still had to do it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's a really, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think through.
I can say that I, as far as creativity and making and building, I'm in a pretty darn good place right now. And it is because of the, I'm working towards this art show. So, I'm in the shop every evening. I'm back to tinkering. When I'm not tinkering and I'm not experimenting off camera, I feel different. I feel like I'm not pushing things forward, but there's a lot of that tinkering now. There's a lot of projects that are going on that's not intended to be a video. And it is really fulfilling. And since I'm doing all of these projects that I know probably are not, most of them are not going to perform well because my audience doesn't want to see the artsy stuff, it is very rewarding for me. So I'm in a good place right now, and I'm enjoying that.
That's good. That was what you just said was another one of the things I was thinking about yesterday, about how I won't speak for anybody else, but for me, it's so easy to fall into the trap of justifying doing something about if it's shareable or not.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I mean? And yeah. Like the tinkering that you're talking about is a really good example of that, because you can justify it if it leads to something productive, or if it leads to a thing that could be a video or whatever, you know. But I was thinking about, while I was walking yesterday, I was thinking about thoughts I have like this, stuff that I think through, that I know I'm not the only person that thinks about this stuff, but I don't do anything with it. I don't write it down. I don't like have a blog that I put
out.
I know. And that's where I got to. I'm like, I only feel like it's valuable to share if it's shared, but it's still valuable to think through, even if it's not shareable, even if it's not, if
yeah, we're just conditioned. Everything is social media. We're just conditioned. That's how humans are now.
Yeah. And I don't like that. I really don't like that about myself. I don't like the fact that I gauge the things that I think through and the things that I want to pursue on if they have an endpoint. And then I get home yesterday and I'm like flipping through YouTube while I'm wasting time. And this video comes up. It's going to be my pick for today. It has 123 views. And it was beautiful. And it was wonderful. It's a great little video. And I looked, I watched the video. I thought, man, that was, I needed that. That was really nice. And then I looked at the view count and I'm like, how did this person justify making that video for 123 views? And then I was like, holy crap, how cynical have I gotten?
Right,
like, what
right.
has this done to me? He made it because it needed to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And it had an effect on me when I watched it. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it was weird. All of this came from the stupid 10 out of 10 last week.
I have a solution, and maybe I can get you guys on board, but we find...
Is it a compound in the mountains where we don't have internet and...
similar.
Oh, okay. Come to my place, there's bad internet here.
We create our own society. We find at least like five more. All the money that we make just goes into a pool. And so now...
There's a name for this.
and then we separate the work from the making a living. And, you know, we get a salary, but all of our money just goes into a pool. And since you guys probably make more money than me, this is going to work out very well in my favor.
Yeah, there is a name for that kind of society, and it's not worked super well. So...
Jamestown.
Maybe we'll keep brainstorming. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it was actually kind of fun to, it was really fun to take a walk and like keep my phone in my pocket and force myself to think, you know, and mm-hmm. think through some of that stuff. And like, I wasn't trying to solve a problem or, you know, whatever, but it was nice to actually be undistracted enough to think through, you know, down a path and like, yeah, what about sharing? Like, why is that important to us? And I think it is important to share some things, but it's not important to share everything. And I think if it's not shareable, then it, at least for me, a lot of time leads me not to give it time in my brain, not to like give it mm-hmm. attention. And it's still valuable, even if it's not for anything. And the whole art thing, like, we've had the art conversation a million times, and I know you guys have, I feel like you guys have a more personal understanding of creating for creation's sake than I have had. But I started to kind of like taste that a little bit as I was thinking down that path. I'm like, yeah, like I can see why it's worth, like music came up in my head. I can see why it's worth me making some music, even if I don't record it. Even if I don't play it for anybody, I don't, yeah. you know, it still has a purpose. And yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to.
That's what pottery is becoming to me. Cause anytime I do a pottery video, it literally is like 15 out of 10. So nobody cares about that, but there's still a certain passion developing in the discovery. This is what we were going to talk a little bit about, is like the breakthroughs you have when you're learning a new skill. And I've talked about pottery for years, obviously. And now finally this year, I'm having some real breakthroughs where the learning is really starting to stick. I'm really starting to have an understanding. I still have so much more to go. And you see some potters that are just absolutely unbelievably, incredibly talented. And I think I'll never get there, but the journey is really the fun thing for me. And I'm out there at night playing around and making things. And I made all these sewer caps out of the slip casts, and a few people around like, are you going to sell those? I'm like, I'm just making them to make them. I don't really have an end goal. I guess I might sell a couple, but everyone is a different shape. Everyone shrinks differently. Everyone's got a different glaze on them. And I'm just doing it just to continuously learn what to expect if I really want to focus on getting results that I'm envisioning in my head. So the more I'm just doing it for the repetitive muscle memory of it. And playing around a little bit with hand building. I'm getting a wheel any minute. It's coming in the mail. Once that comes, I said to Rachel, watch out. There's going to be a million cups and bowls and plates
so
in this
many
house.
Cups.
There's going to be everywhere. You're going to be like, enough. Okay, we're good.
We don't have to wash bowls anymore.
No, we're going to make them and throw them away. We're going to use them and throw them away. Yeah. And it's really freeing. The other thing, too, is you're getting to know this like ancient art that basically started with civilization. And there's like such a weird thing. You took it so for granted. I didn't even understand how ceramics and pottery like comes to be. Like our toilets are made out of this process. Our sinks and so many things are made out of this process. And for years when somebody's like, oh, it's porcelain, I'm like, that just means it's white, glossy. I didn't understand that porcelain was actually a type of clay or a type of slip. And so the breakthroughs in learning these type of things that don't necessarily have an end game, it's very, very freeing. And I see someone like, for instance, I just visited the Richard Rawlings Gas Monkey Garage, and he has a whole complex, and everything's obviously devoted towards earning a dollar. Get a massive, beautifully well-designed gift shop, and there's like a whole staff around it. And I just think of that, I'm like we all think we want this, but do we really want this? I don't want this. I don't want to have to worry about t-shirt inventory and stuff like that. I want to go and play with clay. Yeah. My bills are paid. Occasionally something interesting comes up. My patrons see it first. And then after that, if I make a movie of it, then there's a movie out of it. And I'm very content. Could always earn more money when the money comes in, but I'm very content. I really, when people always say, how's everything? I go, I have absolutely no reason to complain. And as an artist, I get my outlet when it comes to stuff like just experimenting with stuff like clay. And then last year it was leather, and I'm still playing with leather. I'm going to get into the shop this next couple of weeks. I have to make several leather bags for an upcoming show. I'm going to be involved in a show in Troy, New York. And then I have in May, we have the Aerodrome is having a flea market, and I told them I'd bring a lot of my leather bags there. So I only have a small inventory at the moment because I've sold stuff. So I'm going to do a push and make like 25 bags, use up all the leather in my shop. But it's really freeing just to experiment and tinker and not have an end goal of a video by Monday or a video by Sunday. And it's really important as an artist to do that because that's how you have the breakthroughs. And again, the sheet metal class this weekend, just going for no good reason, no goal, just experiment with sheet metal, learn from what the teachers taught us and see what happens when I try to put into effect what I've been listening to. And see how it happens for me. And then I'm over my shoulder going, you did that pretty good, but if you try this a little bit, and they're like, oh yeah, I get better results. So, and that will come in handy, maybe not immediately, but there's going to be a moment in time where I have to put a replacement panel on a car and it doesn't match quite exactly, but now I have a little bit more theory. I could experiment with getting it to match exactly. So it's just experimentation and tinkering. Hmm. And just two remembering things. That not everything has to be content.
If you've never been to the Field Museum in Chicago, I'm pretty sure it's in the Field. They have a pottery section that has pottery from a bunch of different civilizations over time. And it's like you walk through this kind of, it's multiple rooms, but you walk through a path and you see pottery change and style over time. And it was way more interesting than I expected it to be as somebody who's not into pottery.
Yeah.
You should definitely check that out.
That's cool.
But also, I had a question. With pottery, you said you had a breakthrough. Was there a thing, or is it just repetition?
Repetition and just instruction. I call David now, I call him my mentor when it comes to David Smythe. I follow him on Instagram, Smythe Sid Pottery. He's just such an old school guy, him and his wife, him and Judy, they're just such old school potters. And just hanging around, I go there for every Friday if I'm in town, and I spend a couple hours there. And I might, of the 3 or 4 hours I spend, that half of it is just listening and talking and just understanding theory and just the simple of like, oh, hey, what did you try this? Well, I've done this and this works better than that. And getting knowledge from, you know, like the apprentice-master relationship is important. And obviously experimenting on my own, I really wasn't getting anywhere and I wasn't really finding the information I wanted on YouTube. Pottery videos aren't great. They're usually like kind of slow and a little boring, but occasionally I find some guys that are really good. And I really had a breakthrough in finding pottery Instagram because the information is delivered quick and fast versus slow and methodical, and you kind of lose interest and you have a hard time staying focused. So Instagram has been really great. Even seeing stuff with no voiceover, it's just like, this is a demo, and I'm like, aha. And I never understood how the bottom of a pot, I go, how do you spin a pot? And then the bottom has a dimple in it. Like, at what point you spin it and you let it dry a little bit, day or two, and then you turn it over and then you carve the bottom like wood. And I was like, that blew my mind. I'm like, that's such a simple thing. But I remember in the beginning of this window of learning that. And it's like, oh yeah, you just let it dry for a couple hours till it gets to like cheese hard, and then you sculpt the bottom and just stupid things like that. And then it's funny, Dave knows so much that he sees me doing, he's like, oh, come to my wheel. So he'll just throw a lump of clay on and get to a point where he just wants to demonstrate one technique. So he does that all the time, which is really great. Because he'll see me struggling with something and go, oh, you know what? Come over here. Let me show you how you should do it. Or this is one way to approach it. So it's having a good teacher, and then really just repetition, like you said, just getting in there and doing it by hand. And the more you do, the more you start to understand what you've done wrong and what's working right. And now I'm experimenting with the glazes. And then paying your electric bill is fun after all that. It's really fun. running the kiln is, it's like, I'd rather just like have like three kilns in the house and run those. So I could be making things while I'm heating the house. That would probably be better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of running the heating system and the kiln at the same time and then getting that electric bill. My electric bill for the house last month was $1,200.
My goodness. What?
Whoa. I thought mine was high.
Yeah. That was for the house and the barn. That's like me working and then through the dead of winter. That was like the last cold month.
You leave all the doors open all the time?
No.
You're heating the outside, as Mom used to say.
Yeah, I'm heating the field. That's what I say. So could you close the door? Because we're heating the backyard. Yeah. No, that's just running the kiln this couple times this year. Because the electric bill, like I said, the house and the barn are on the same meter. That's usually around 500. So this time it was a lot.
Man. Great.
But that's life. You gotta pay to play. As they say.
As they say. Cool. Any other thoughts on this?
I don't want to be the guy who always talks about his morning walks, but
do it.
I'm going to be the guy who talks about his morning walks, because every day when the weather's not right, I'll get on the elliptical, but it is 30 minutes and it is no headphones. There's no podcast. There's no audiobooks. There's no music. It's just me and my dumb thoughts for 30 minutes every day. And you'd be surprised on how many breakthroughs you have, or how deep you start to go, like you did, and thinking about this. And it's more important than ever to have downtime and boredom, and not somebody in your ear, and being entertained at all times, because you'll just be amazed at the ideas that you come up with. I have an hour drive later today. I plan on not turning on the radio and just thinking the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Cool.
Yep.
Well, do you have something, Jimmy?
What about? No?
Did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. Huge thanks to everybody at Patreon that supports the show. I was thinking about my personal Patreon yesterday, and I don't know. It's a weird thing. But when I think about the Patreon of this podcast, it's different because it is the support that we have. We don't run ads. We don't get ad revenue. We don't have sponsors. We don't any of that. And so this show happens because people step up and support and make it possible. And that's unique and amazing to me. Yeah, so I'm really grateful to everybody over there at every level. Everybody that supports gets the after show, no matter how much. And so we're really grateful for that. But the top supporters, the people that go above and beyond, always want to say thank you to them. That's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Jim from Wiser Bees, Master of None, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Low End Design, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Tinia Space Industries, and Works by Solo.
Thank you, guys.
Hugely grateful for all of the support over there. And you can join up that crew and get the after show by going to patreon.com/makingit and sign up at whatever level you want. We're just thankful to have you. And for those of you that are not on Patreon, we're thankful that you're listening. I've got kind of two things to recommend, finally, so in case anybody's missing one. But what do you guys have?
I'm going to recommend a movie. Rachel forces me to watch movies because she knows that the artist in me neglects that part of entertainment because it takes too long. It takes too long to watch a movie. So you guys know that I'm not a huge movie buff when it comes. I love lots of movies, obviously. So anyway, so Rachel forces me to sit and watch a movie. And the other night we watched a movie called The Testament of Anne Lee. Have you guys heard of this movie?
No.
And the reason I bring it up is a couple of very specific reasons. The Testament of Anne Lee. Anne Lee is the woman who basically founded the Shaker movement in 1770s. She was, I pulled it up a second ago. Anne Lee, the founding leader of the Shaker movement, proclaimed as the female Christ by her followers in England. And they, at one point, she was being, you know, cast out because it was something weird and new. She got on a boat with like 10 or 15 people, came to New York, got on a boat in the river and went up the Hudson and landed right where the Albany Airport is now and created the first Shaker community. And they became self-reliant, which is why they have Shaker furniture, because they basically taught themselves how to do everything. And it was like, it was basically like what we were talking about before. It reminded me, like saying, let's make a community where everything is like done here and it's done well and it's pays for itself. And then the second Shaker community was in a town called New Lebanon, which is a little bit closer to the Connecticut border. And I think it's the Massachusetts border. Anyway, it was, the movie really blew me away because it's just such a beautifully well-made movie with a fairly historically accurate story about Anne Lee, and it hits close to home. It's right here in New York, which is incredible. Like, if you would assume the Shaker movement, I just figured, I don't know, Massachusetts, Plymouth, you know, like it, as the older I get, the world history and American history starts to really fall into the timeline of like, ah, okay, now it makes sense. These things and how they land, and you know, the Plymouth Rock was like 1620, and this is like 17, and then the Salem witches. Me and Rachel have been delving into the Salem witch information and that historical moment in time, and how all these things fell in line with each other. You think back, and you're like, that was all just back then, you know. But it was like across several hundred years, and how it shaped and still inspires what happens now. All those many years ago. So check out The Testament of Anne Lee. It's a beautiful movie. It's a little bit of a musical, but it's not hokey. It's really beautifully done.
Hmm. Okay.
Noted. Mine is from a dude named Adam G. Makes, and the video is called "I Spent Weeks Building This Custom Electrical Mechanical Display." So like those old flippy number things that you would see at the train stations back in the day. He made a big one where all the letters flip to read out whatever. And it's pretty darn awesome. It's cool to see how the mechanisms actually work. And, you know, all the letters and numbers and the symbols, they're on one reel. And then you're using motion control to have it turn into a certain spot to reveal that letter, but all of that movement has to be perfect, and plus you have to make sure the next letter is not going to flip. It's more involved than I ever thought it would be.
I looked at making one of those years ago. Like, I was like, oh, this would be a cool thing to do, and I just barely dipped my toes into what it would take, and I'm like, nope. No, thank you. Laura Kampf sent me, it's not the same thing, but you know, the little, it's the same kind of mechanism where you flip it has a black and a white side. And so you can build a sign out of flipping the two things over. Mm-hmm. Laura sent me a segment of one of those, and it's probably 9x6 or something. It's pretty small. And it was from a train station in Germany somewhere. Somehow she got, I don't know how she gets all the stuff she gets, but. And it was like, and this was 2015 or 14 or something. And I just got this little box from her with this little segment of there and a bunch of wires coming off of the back of it. And I'm like, oh, this would be so cool to figure out how to, and I never did. Thank you, Laura, for that. And I would like to do that someday, but it's very complicated. Let's see. So I have two things. One is the video I was talking about earlier. It just randomly came up on my feed. I don't know who the guy is. I don't know what else he's done. I didn't go to looking. It's called "You're Moving Too Fast to See It." And it's just him talking to the camera about sitting in a field, trying to take a picture of a landscape and being still long enough to kind of like zoom in and see a tick on a piece of grass, and then realized that it's just really cool. He's talking about how if you're still long enough, you start to see things that are unaware of you, and how much is happening, how much small life is happening, and how, you know, just the world around you is there, whether you realize it or not. And it's just a really beautiful little short, I don't know, awareness of that. So I would watch that when you're not doing something else and you can actually like enjoy just paying attention to it. The other thing is a random, I don't know, there's an instrument, a traditional Japanese instrument called shamisen. I'm sure that's not how you say it. I don't know. It's like a little banjo. It's a little box with a guitar neck kind of thing coming out of it. Usually three strings. They play it with a pick that looks like a hair pick. It's like a big, wide, flat thing, and they use the corner of it and they pick it. You've heard this before. I've always loved the sound of this instrument, but I don't know anything about it. And there's a really cool stop motion animation movie that I like called Kubo and the Two Strings, where this character, and if you've never seen Kubo, you need to watch that movie. It's beautiful, and it's all stop motion done by Leica. Anyway, this instrument is really cool. I've always liked the instrument. Don't know anything about it. Randomly, Instagram starts feeding me people playing this instrument, and it's unbelievable what they can do with this instrument as a single person or as a group. I've seen a thing of like 10 or 15 people playing it at the same time, and it's just mind-blowing. Then yesterday, it shows me this group called Some Lines. I don't know. And it's three guys. I assume they're guys. I don't really know. They have big rice hats on. They have like utilitarian jumpsuit, cargo pocket, cool suits on. And those masks that samurai would wear that have like the dragon mask teeth face thing. They look awesome. They look like assassins, but one of them is playing this guitar thingy. One of them is beatboxing and the other one is dancing. And it's this crazy modern hip hop Japanese dance art thing. And it's so cool. And it just like randomly showed up and I started watching a whole bunch of them. And then I realized that like Groz follows them and a bunch of other people I know. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Groz follows anyway. All the cool accounts. He really does have a finger on the pulse.
I would just check them out. And maybe it's not your thing. Like the music is probably a certain taste, but I don't know. It was really cool to find something that was just cool. You know, it has like no, I'm not going to make one of these things or become a dancer or any of that type of stuff, but it was just cool to find. So that's what I got. You guys got anything else for today?
That's it. This Sunday, I think it's Sunday, Jackman's having a hockey game. Go check out Jackman's socials. I'm going to be there. All the guys from the show, a few other people are going to be there.
Are you playing or are you reffing?
No, I do not want to fall on the ice. I'm just going to be watching through the glass safely from the stands.
Tell them I said hello.
Cool. Yeah. So if anybody's in the Rhode Island area, come check out the hockey game. You'll see it on Jackman's socials where and when and how.
It'll be on ESPN3.
Yes. ESPN5.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and catch you next time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Love you.